Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Friday, July 30th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Clay Collins.
And I'm Ashley Wissenby.
You may have seen Elliot Middleton's story on a network talk show delivered as an upbeat little yarn. It's actually more. Not quite a year ago, this barbecue restaurant owner in South Carolina's Low Country started fixing up vehicles for strangers in need, for free. His dad taught him how to wield a wrench and to be kind. Mr. Middleton works backcountry style, cars in the open, no fancy shop. The cars aren't fancy either. Plenty have what car people call moon mileage. Many have surely tallied what would be round trips there from Earth. Mr. Middleton had given away more than 30 cars before national media found him this month. As his story spread, so did offers of car donations, some 800 from around the country, he tells CBS News, plus more than $100,000 in cash. Soul-soothing, he says. His work fills gaps. Automobile prices have soared as the supply chain for high-tech components has faltered, dropping new car inventory and pushing up prices on new and used cars. In Mr. Middleton's region, transit and ride services are not an option. So at a time when the right to repair is being fought for, affecting vehicles from Teslas to tractors, a spotlight-averse man in Awandah, South Carolina, is carefully matching generosity to need. The young man is very overwhelmed, says his sister in a video on their foundation's Facebook page. He's also still in drive. He aims to expand his car collection range outward from the Carolinas and Georgia to broaden his giving. There are so many of us who will do the right thing if someone like Mr. Middleton sets an example and walks the walk, one site visitor posted. Ripples are turning into waves, and society is showing its humanity. Now to today's stories. Our first story. The United States has been largely drawn into two camps with starkly different views of vaccines and the pandemic, but there is evidence that thought is shifting in areas that have so far been wary.
American attitudes toward COVID-19 vaccinations may be slowly shifting toward more widespread acceptance as coronavirus cases surge in some states and officials urge holdouts to get a shot. Some of the U.S. areas most resistant to vaccines in the past now lead in the nation in the number of people getting their first shot. Louisiana, for instance, has the fourth lowest vaccination rate among states, but in recent days has seen vaccinations rise to their highest rate since April. Experts say it's possible that a new push by some GOP leaders changed some minds in the least vaccinated portions of the country, which tend to be conservative. But it's more likely that the increases are due to a variety of factors, including the deteriorating health situation in states with a high rate of unvaccinated people and the urging of family, friends, and medical providers. Vaccinated and unvaccinated people can seem to live in two different worlds, even when they're from the same family. Take San Antonio, Texas resident Dakota Flores, who is vaccinated, and her adult daughter, Patience Flores Lopez, who is not. The elder Miss Flores got her first shot as soon as she could because she and other family members have conditions that could make them vulnerable. I was hoping we were going to get back to normal, she says. This story was reported by Peter Greer, Henry Gass, and special correspondent Xander Peters for The Monitor.
Discrimination and violence against Asian Americans have made headlines this year. Overlooked in some coverage, though, is a key part of their community's response, renewed pride, and a political reawakening.
Voter turnout by Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders increased in the 2020 election more than for any other racial or ethnic group. It's just one aspect of what Asian American leaders call a surge in political engagement in recent years. Around 23 million people identify as Asian American in the United States, and many in this diverse community have banded together in the face of rising racism and attacks during the pandemic. Chinese American leaders, in particular, say they've seen a striking growth in political engagement. An uptick would be an understatement, says Haipei Xu, president of the United Chinese Americans, a nonprofit that was formed in 2016. He attributes the change to a triple whammy: the Trump presidency and U.S.-Chinese economic and political tensions that made the Chinese community very nervous and worried about its future, the intensifying polarization of American politics, and the disproportionately high number of pandemic deaths in the Chinese-American community. In the Chinese community, like it or not, everybody has become more politicized in recent years, says Mr. Xu. Not necessarily because they love it, but most likely because they cannot run away from it. This story was reported by Ann Scott Tyson in Seattle for The Monitor.
There are still kinks in the flow of funds aimed at averting evictions, less noticed amid dire predictions, action around long-term alternatives that could offer real hope of progress for tenants and landlords alike.
With the federal eviction moratorium expiring this weekend, tenants and housing advocates are braced. Just how large the wave of evictions may be remains to be seen, but there's hope it won't swamp the economy. On the one hand, the U.S. economy has been climbing steadily back out of its pandemic hole, and with so much federal aid earmarked for emergency rental assistance, the avalanche of evictions may be smaller than originally predicted. On the other hand, of the nearly $47 billion allocated since December, only a tiny percentage, about 6%, has been spent as of June, leaving renters and landlords in limbo. And 14% to 16% of renters say they still can't pay their back rent. On Friday, Congress was considering an 11th-hour reprieve, but the outcome was uncertain. States, cities, and nonprofits have been racing to get as much rental assistance money out the door as possible before July 31st. And with billions left unspent, there's an opportunity to keep funding levels for emergency rental assistance at new highs for years to come. Some cities are using that as an opportunity to create models that treat evictions as a last resort rather than business as usual. This story was reported by Nick Roll in Cincinnati for The Monitor.
The long wait for Tokyo 2020, as organizers are still calling the games, piled uncertainty and stress on many athletes, but for others, it opened the door to opportunity.
If the Tokyo Olympics had actually taken place in 2020, Kaylee Gilchrist likely wouldn't have been part of them. 2 years ago, Ms. Gilchrist was celebrating her water polo team's victory at World Championships in South Korea when the balcony she was standing on collapsed. Two people standing nearby died, and Ms. Gilchrist ended up in the hospital. It was a long road to recovery, but when the pandemic postponed the games, her story became a rallying point for the team. If they had to wait another year, at least Ms. Gilchrist would be there. For many athletes, the postponed games have taken away. For others, like Ms. Gilchrist, the wait has been a gift. And for her team, the sense of serendipity has added a source of strength and perseverance at a sorely needed time. Every Olympics is new, says Captain Maggie Steffens, but the Tokyo Games have challenged athletes unlike any other. Ms. Gilchrist's recovery came to symbolize the squad's collective challenges, and it gave it a collective reason to persevere. Kaylee's somebody that brings a lot of light to our team, says Ms. Steffens, and with that light, she brings a lot of hope. This story was reported by Noah Robertson in Tokyo for The Monitor.
What does it mean to live an honorable life? The Green Knight, a film based on a medieval Arthurian poem, examines the historical demands of chivalry and the timeless quest for dignity. You can read Tyler Bay's full review in today's issue at csmonitor.com/daily. Now, commentary from The Monitor's editorial board on the stampede into national parks. After being cooped up by COVID-19 and largely denied the ability to travel overseas, Americans have taken to their national parks this summer in huge numbers. But along with scenic beauty, they've often confronted crowded trails, traffic jams, and parking nightmares. Maine's Acadia Park, for example, hosted nearly 1.2 million visitors through June of this year. That's a 33% jump over the same period in 2019, just prior to the pandemic. In response, some of the most popular national parks have been forced to close their gates early in the day. The growth in visitor numbers poses one of the greatest challenges the National Park Service has ever faced, Christy Brangle, Senior Vice President for Government Affairs at the National Parks Conservation Association, told a U.S. Senate hearing. To accommodate the crush, parks have been responding with innovative solutions. They're employing timed entry reservation systems and shuttle services to cut the number of vehicles clogging their roads. National park crowding may ease in the future as other travel options open up, but lessons learned now can help parks improve visitor experiences. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for being here. Come back again next week. The most desegregated cities in the United States tend to be military towns, but are the effects of their demographics, identity, community felt beyond the bases? We'll explore. Also, a weekend recommendation. Get your hands on a speaker or some headphones and check out Stronger, our newest podcast, for some powerful stories of persistent women. If you like it, spread the word. Find it at csmonitor.com/stronger. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how, when things go awry, recognizing the power and presence of God, good, opens the door to solutions and healing. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Ure Okike.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2021.